for joining us for the fifth Farm Credit from the Farm Gate panel discussion. We have covered livestock and large-scale vegetable and dairy and rural health and rural broadband thus far, and today we're incredibly excited to bring you three amazing panelists who are going to talk about their farm-to-table direct-to-consumer operation. Really, you know, we've found that Farm Credit customers and producers are really the best messengers to explain to folks how this continuing pandemic is impacting their businesses and how they are working through the opportunities and the challenges that this pandemic has presented. So before I turn it over to our moderator, just a couple quick housekeeping items. First, we're going to start with our moderated panel discussion that will be about, 20 to 30 minutes. And from there, we'll take your audience questions. Feel free to type your question into the sidebar, the Q&A. If you don't see the Q&A sidebar, you can find it by clicking on those three little dots at the bottom of your screen and hitting click Q&A. And then dropping down the caret next to Q&A will give you the box to type in your question. When we get to the audience question portion, we will go ahead and read those questions anonymously so that we can really have the most open, honest conversation possible. So we really hope that you'll participate, you'll ask your questions, and we can have a really full discussion in the second half of this conversation. I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to our moderator. Our moderator today is Erin Piro with Farm Credit East. She's a certified agriculture consultant, and she's worked with many, many operations of different scales, but mostly a specialty in sort of the direct-to-consumer farm-to-table operations since 2001. So we're excited to have her. She's going to give a brief overview of kind of what we're seeing across the country in farm-to-table operations, and then she's going to go ahead and have a conversation with our panelists. So again, welcome, and please take it away, Erin.
All right, thank you. Welcome, everybody. My family also has a sheep farm, and we sell direct to consumer. We sell lamb and then also wool products like yarn for knitters. So this pandemic has definitely changed our business as well. And what I love about direct to consumer ag retailers is that they're always looking for the way to figure out how can we get this done. Life just threw us a curveball. What are we going to do next? And we're already doing that just by virtue of the subsector that we're working in. And as Jenny said, I've had the honor of working with enterprising individuals like the ones you're going to meet today that have not only survived, but have managed their businesses to thrive during this unprecedented time. As you'll hear, these humble stewards of the soil and of livestock and of customers, right? They don't consider themselves frontline workers, but they are the ones out there every day reassuring their customers about the availability of food when grocery store shelves were empty and food insecurity was at its highest. Our staff worked harder than ever because the work multiplied faster than we could hire and train our teams. And they figured it out, all while keeping masked, socially distanced, and cheerfully serving their customers, even when they were exhausted. We've all learned what it's like to work on programs that are launched in a hurry, and you're going to hear more about these enterprising farmers making significant investments ahead of the curve, not only to meet demand, but to be able to serve their customers and not burn out their staff. Let's take a farm market, for example, and where you live, you may call them a roadside stand. Pre-COVID, a customer would stop by, select their produce, their meats, their other farm products, and bring it to the register to pay. But when COVID hit and we were all instructed to keep our distance, limit contact, and go no contact if at all possible, the question wasn't, can we do this? The question these folks asked was, how can we do this? They're going to figure out how to get it done. And many started offering things like curbside pickup. So let's think about what that means in real life. Think about telling someone your very specific grocery list over the phone. How long is that going to take? And if you're shopping for a family of four, that's not going to be four quick things. That's going to probably be $100 worth of product. And you're used to having a lot of choices, so you're going to be very specific. So in order to combat that, a lot of producers went online. They developed systems to facilitate online ordering, which meant building a technological platform or expanding one to cover hundreds, if not thousands, of SKUs, all of which needed prices, descriptions, pictures, the proper sales tax treatment. None of this is fast, but it had to happen in a hurry, and it had to happen right. And they did it. It's a question of how do you want to spend your time and what do you want to spend doing it. So think about how long it takes you to grocery shop. If I'm in the grocery store in, quote, normal times for 45 minutes, I consider that a win. So now let's think about, from an employee standpoint, if I'm the one packing these orders that came in through the curbside pickup system, and I know where everything is in a small store and I have a very specific list, if I could do that in 15 minutes, I'd be a rock star. So let's multiply that out through the day. If I could do this 15 minutes per order, that's 4 per hour times 8 in a day shift, I just filled 32 orders. So when my boss, our farm market, got 278 orders that first day, what kind of scale do I need to do in a hurry to be able to meet that demand and not burn people out? That's the kind of challenges we're facing in this sector of agriculture, working directly with consumers, right? We're hustling, we're getting it done, we're filling those orders, but it's coming at a very different cost. It's not coming at the cost of a crop loss. It's coming at the cost of investment in technology and people to help us do our jobs. People that we want to pay a good wage to so that they will want to keep working with us. And that's why I'm so excited that we have these three agri-entrepreneurs with us today to be able to share their stories about the amazing things that they're doing, not just to survive, but to thrive. So welcome you all, and I'd love to have you start by giving us a quick description of your operation and how the pandemic has impacted you in your business. So Alex, let's start with you.
Oh, great. Hello, I'm Alex Ball. I own Old City Acres. We are a small veggie farm that started my freshman year of college almost 8 years ago. I'm going to say we. It's just me, but I don't sound arrogant, so I'm going to say we. And we're located on a small plot of land about an hour south of Detroit. And we grow a mixed variety of vegetables in a lot of unheated greenhouses. So we grow 12 months out of the season. So we deliver that 12 months of product to about 50 households through our CSA programs, as well as through the farmers markets, some restaurants and retailers. And because of the pandemic, we opened up a self-serve farm stand as well, with some other outlet for our products. As many of you know, COVID hit really hard in the Metro Detroit area this spring, and overnight, every restaurant, farmers market, and wholesale account that we had just closed, disappeared instantly. I remember being at market the very last day, hearing about this COVID thing, like, oh, well, it'll be a big issue, we'll figure it out. And then necessarily realized, oh, no, this is a huge, this is a major thing. So when the market closed down, it really kind of shuttered our business for a second, because as a four-season business, those winter markets are crucial with cash flow just so low. We make a lot of our income in the spring months because we have the greenhouses. We can take full advantage of those. So the time of the year we make our biggest income was now being, you know, stifled, being knocked down really quickly. And kind of scary, because as a full-time direct consumer, small-scale veggie farmer, there aren't a lot of safety nets that are in place to catch someone like me. So I didn't doubt that I'd be okay. But as a career farmer, we deal with COVID situations like this all the time. There's always something on the horizon that we have to overcome. So I wasn't afraid they were going to close our business down, but I knew it would just be a really, really hard challenge. But again, sadly, just another day on the farm, so overcoming the challenge and moving forward.
Okay. Now, does your greenhouse sell ornamental plants as well as food?
No, all food.
Production, okay.
All food production.
That was a greenhouse full of hanging baskets, for instance, and you weren't allowed to sell them.
Yeah.
How about you, Kelly? Tell us about your operation and what you're selling and where you are.
Yes, I'm Kelly Campbell. My father is a seventh-generation farmer from Central North Carolina, and my sisters and I are trying to carry on that legacy in Hendersonville by owning and operating a produce stand. You call it, roadside stand, but it's a little bit more. It's like a market. It's called Johnson Family Farm. Obviously, our main line is produce because we come from a produce farmer. But really, we branched out and we opened up in March, and that's way pre-season. produced. So we actually carry in a lot of other stuff, like local beef and pork and coffee and variety besides produce. So we actually are considered like a little group, but we can eat some nice ingredients. And we really pride ourselves in that because, you know, being a farmer's daughter, we've seen how far agriculture, it's just been hard to really make people buy and eat grown stuff. So that was my sisters and I, our biggest desire was to have a place that you knew that you were getting stuff that was either USA grown or even we're supporting local families here in Hendersonville. So COVID has many impacts on us, good and bad. Just like Alex was saying, you know, it just happened so quickly. You know, we had planned an opening in April. That's when our season really starts. So we actually opened up earlier just because of COVID in March to help our customers because we knew that we needed to be a safe place for them to get produce. So we went from having a month away from opening to turning around and opening up immediately. And then obviously we had to find a way to do it safely. And we'll talk about that with adaptations. But that was really hard, just like you said, in just a couple of days figuring out how are we going to do this and how are we going to make this profitable for us and be worth it for us to be open. Due to COVID, there's so much uncertainty that comes every day. We had to live the season on the tip of our toes. So every day it was, what's going to be today? What are we going to do today? You know, every day it was something new. It felt like mandates federally and state levels and just looking at the numbers and the cases rising all around us. How are we going to do this? And how do we keep staying open and keeping everyone safe? But my sisters and I are also mothers. There's 9 children from the 3 of us and we're the owners of the store. So having schools dropped out and all of a sudden we had to find childcare on top of being on this thriving business. I mean, we took off in March and April but when we took off, the school shut down. So it was very hard to figure out a way to be working moms and then, you know, not only be good business owners, but good mothers to our children.
And when you say took off, give us a scale idea of how much busier were you? Did your business double in that time period?
Triple. So in March, typically we call it the loser month. We open in April. And April we considered the loser month. My sisters and I don't even pull a paycheck from April into May, usually in previous seasons. And we do that just to build up our bank account because we're a seasonal business. So in the winter, we have that nest egg in October that we use to get us through those winter months. And then we have to capitalize on that money in the very beginning of the season because we can buy all our products because we don't have anything growing in the fields at that moment. So it's a very hard, like I said, a loser month. It's very hard just to keep above your profit margin and make sure you're keeping afloat. So we typically don't even pull a paycheck. Well, we were able to pull a paycheck the very first week we opened, which was huge for us. And like I said, our business tripled. We, in that time, did put on an online store, so that helped us, and we'll talk about that and how great that was. It's just been fantastic.
So amazing opportunities combined with some challenges you never thought you'd even have to deal with. And Trevor, let's go to you next because you were talking during our earlier session about, wow, I never thought I'd be saying this to customers because your also increased dramatically during March and April.
Absolutely. So I'm Trevor Huff. I co-own with my wife Local Homestead Products in New Windsor, Maryland. We're an on-farm market where we do a little bit of everything from produce to meats to selling other local farms' products to, as Aaron said, we were one of the greenhouses looking at 550 hanging baskets hanging up there, wondering if we were going to sell them because we grow hanging baskets through the winter for our spring open house. So it was quite the crazy feeling in the beginning of this to go from such uncertainty in the beginning where we thought, you know, we were starting to make plans of how do we get through because it's going to be slow. We're going to slow down. We're not going to have the same income that we're used to the other side of this where we had days that were better than months that we had in the past. And when our spring open house was going to happen, the day that it usually happens and we had to cancel that, I was concerned to look at numbers from last year compared to this year because this is a day where we usually have 5,000 people come to our farm. And of course, you're hoping that 5,000 people don't show up anywhere right at the moment. So it's quite the difference for us to look at. And, you know, there were days where we were 1,200% up from last year. One of our days that we had in the spring was more. Now, we've been open 10 years, but we had one Saturday that we did more than we did the whole first year we were open. So in 12 hours, we did more than the whole first year. And you start looking back at things and say, were we just wasting our time before this? And so it is an awful situation that has had to happen. But it was a situation where local producers were able to step up with the help of help from Farm Credit, especially for us, to make these advancements very quickly to keep on going.
Awesome. You had the idea and then had to put all the pieces together, yet at the same time, you're talking about things like events being canceled, and that's near and dear to my heart. You're in Maryland, which is one of the biggest sheep and wool festivals, which got canceled in May.
Yep.
And Rhinebeck, New York is the one next to us that has been canceled. So we're trying to figure out how do we go virtual and decorate all the things and show all the products that we would normally get to do in person in a very tactile heavy environment, which we don't want right now. So what kind of things are you doing to change to meet the demand of your customers, which is still there? And at the same time, how are you adapting to keep your employees and your customers safe? We'll go back to you and work backwards.
So for us, it started right there in end of February, early March, with us trying to make sure we were doing all the right things. We started limiting how many people could come into our store. So we limited down to 15 at first and then realized, hey, we need to limit down to 10. Then it was 10, including employees in our store. So then you're starting to really scale back and you're having to make sure that you're running as many registers as you can. During some of this, we were running 3 registers. We were running 1 in the greenhouse and 2 out in the, 2 in the market. So you have 1 person stocking the shelves, 2 people in the market running registers. You now have 7 customers that you can have in your store. Well, there were times where we were doing a checkout every minute during these when we were running 3 registers. So my employees were just going crazy. And this came with help from family, friends. You know, everybody kind of knew that this was going on, but how to help, we weren't sure. So we had a tent out front because we didn't know how busy we were going to be. So we put up a little 20 by 20 tent to have people out of the sun and out of the cold rain. Because you got to remember, this was starting when it was cold, when it was rainy and snowy. And we had people that waited 2 hours just to get in our store. There were lines. People would start lining up 2 hours before we started. And then we would be open for an hour, hour and a half after we were set to close. And my people just kept on chugging along. And that is, we owe them the world. These folks that worked alongside us and at any of these farm markets and grocery stores to keep the product moving, because people were scared and people wanted to know where their next meal was coming from, and they didn't know that. And the small farms, like Alex, like myself, you know, we were able to go and say, hey, you can come buy from us. And this has given us a great opportunity, but we had to make sure we didn't fall flat on our face too, because I think the grocery store did they just didn't do a great job at this, keeping their shelves stocked. And we were stocking at night and making sure that we kept everything going. So we had farmers picking stuff overnight just to keep are shelf stocked in the morning. So, and I'm sure Alex knows all about that working in the greenhouses. So, you know, it's when you go from a March time frame where you're supposed to only be working those little shorter hours to get ready for the season, and then you start working 21, 22 hours in a day, and you get to have a nap and not go to sleep at night, but you get a nap, that's, it's quite the difference.
Oh, and your brain needs sleep to function properly. And Kelly, you were describing
that. Later on.
Kelly, you were describing that with all your little kids around, too, so you never have enough hands. Tell us how you've adapted to meet the demands of your customers in the wake of all of this, and then keep everybody safe at the same time, including your family.
Yes, so we, like I said earlier, our first adaptation was just opening earlier than we usually would. We wanted to be able to give our customers, we have a very big retirement community here in Hendersonville, and we want to give our elderly customers a way to feel safe when they were shopping. You know, I have all my family here in Hendersonville, and I have grandparents still alive, so we're thinking about them. Like, do we really want them walking around the grocery stores, especially when everyone's going crazy? You know, it was like a madhouse in there. So that's one reason we went ahead and opened up, but we knew, obviously, we're going to have to do some changes. So just like Trevor was saying, we had to make sure we were social distancing. We had a limit on how many people could come into the store. We're an open-air market, so that's kind of better for the circulation and everything, but we made sure we put more fans in there because we read that air circulation can help stop the spread. We had all our garage doors open. We're, like I said, an open-air market with multiple garage doors. We had all those open, even when it was cold in March, we made sure we had those open. We put a lot of our stuff on the outside that we could, so we were outside more than people were inside. Within a week, though, we decided, you know what, the best way to do this is to open an online store. So we had to quickly develop this online store, which you kind of talked about. It's very hard to do that with produce. You know, I actually have done Harris Teeter's online store, and I usually don't do my produce on there because I want to see my produce that I'm buying. And so that was definitely a change, just how we could convince these people that we're going to pick out good produce for them. Obviously, at that time, like I said, we're buying. My father grows for us the 15 acres behind, but at that time, he had nothing growing in the field. So we had to buy it on, so we had to make sure we were buying good products and then making sure we were packing good produce for these customers. So we went from 10 to 15 orders a day to 70 to 80 a day. And we didn't have but three members of staff because at that time in March, usually we're able to operate on that. So we had to hire a whole line of staff to make sure we could get these orders packed and do it right. We had to make sure we had enough products. We were only buying a couple things at that time. And here we are, we had to buy a new van just to make sure we could haul the amount of produce. So we bought this big Dodge Transit van. So that was a big step for us. It's a big investment for our company, especially at that time when we don't have a lot of capital to start the year off. So we not only had to hire a bunch of new staff, we had to buy a new van, we had to put up with making 70 to 80 orders a day and making sure they were packed correctly, which is hard in itself, making sure that your employees are doing what they're supposed to. But we also wanted to make our walk-in customers feel comfortable, so we did have the social distancing. All of our employees are wearing masks. We sanitize the building throughout the day. We have hand sanitizer throughout the building and ask customers to put their hand sanitizer on before they start picking out their produce. We have plexiglass screens at the register. As Trevor mentioned, we had to open up more registers. We went from having 2 to 4 because we wanted to make sure we had people coming in and out quickly versus staying in the building. Keep up with that. And again, I said we had fans, and then we do daily screening for all my employees. So we have to take their temperature, ask them questions, make sure that they're safe before they come into work. So it's just, there was a lot of things we had to quickly figure out how to do. We're not healthcare workers. We don't, you know, it's just a realm of things you don't think of when you open a produce market. Okay, how do I make sure that I'm not passing germs? You know, it's just something that we had to make sure we were doing correctly. For not only us, but for our customers. Like I said, I'm a mom. When I opened in March, my daughter was only 7 months old. So it was a big concern to keep her safe with me coming home every day. So it was just, you know, I always tell my customers, believe me, if I thought it was unsafe and needed to be in here, I wouldn't be in here because I had a baby that I got to get home to. So I think our customers at this point, we have such loyal customers. They knew that we were going to take care of them. And that's why we've just been successful. And really with the online store, it kind of went viral around in our area that we were doing this program. And we have about three, every month I was looking at, we have on my square, you can see how many returning customers versus new customers. And every month I have almost matching new customers to returning customers. So it's great because, you know, they're not supposed to be new customers anymore, but every month we're getting new and new customers. So I think it's just been wonderful for this business to have the online store.
Yeah, and that's, I think that's going to be taking us well into the future, even when we do feel comfortable getting together again. So, Alex, same question for you. How have you adapted to meet demands on your customers and your employees? And you said it was just you, but...
It's just me, yeah. The one-man show. Well, I said earlier, you know, all of our market streams, especially in the winter for farmers, are pretty small. They're, you know, they're a little more precious to us in the winter, so you need them. But I had to see what was left. And the only thing left that I could sell to was my CSA. For those who don't know what CSA, Community Supported Agriculture, it's a model where consumers prepay for produce in the spring to help support farmers for the entire season. And luckily, my CSA was already 100% online-based. It was already a flexible online model because as one-person show, it had to be as efficient as possible. And that model just kind of rose to the top as efficiency goes. And the nice part about it was that it could be picked up from multiple convenient outdoor locations already. So it really lended itself to social distancing. So I decided that I need to really grow that part of the business. And it was kind of like a scary decision to make because, you know, you're taking people's money in advance. They're prepaying for things, and that's a lot of risk to take on. But I decided it was the only thing I had left available was that CSA model. And when I decided to say, this is what we're doing, the CSA blew up. In 2 or 3 weeks, our CSA quadrupled. And I heard that from other farmers in the area as well, who sold out CSA shares in, you know, a few days, which was fantastic and really gave a nice influx of cash into the business. But I knew that long term, we didn't know how things were going to work out. We didn't know markets open back up again. So I decided to use that CSA money to invest in a farm stand. So I bought an ultra container and we put coolers into it and turned it into a roadside self-serve little stand up there on the property. So this program, you know, doing the farm stand and growing the CSA worked fantastically, but kind of on the downsides of it, it cost a ton of money to open retail location on our property. And we did that. We built the entire retail area in about 2 months, from driveways to running power to the facilities. It was just so much all at one time. And like you probably know, even beyond infrastructure to sell vegetables, the upfront cost to produce year-round vegetables is insanely high. And it's a lot of upfront costs. So a lot of that all came at one time. At the same time, when we were, you know, cash low and expenses high. So all kind of purpose start came together. So we had about 1 week where we were a little worried, a little scared. But then kind of mirroring what Kelly and Trevor said, that the minute we figured out what we were doing and kind of reopened up after a week or so, the responses were fantastic and business just swarmed in. And now we're at a point, we were at this trend where demand is here and here's supply. So we're constantly trying to knock our supply up to meet that local demand now. So it's been fantastic as far as demand goes.
Wow. So I think that's a great opportunity to say, you know, we've had great support from Congress and USDA in terms of agriculture is important and we need to make sure we come through this. But you're not talking about crop losses, any of you. You're talking about intense investment in a hurry to make this possible, not just in technology, but in people. So how could these programs help you better when it's not a loss that you're working through? It's taking all the money that you would have needed to get through winter and having to invest it now just to get through this season. Well, what would be helpful for you?
For me?
Yeah, let's start with you.
Oh, that's cool. Perfect. Any type of program based on either previous year's profits from year to year. Right now, a lot is based off of the loss. Like you said, there was no loss this year. There was no loss. I think the hard part for me, too, especially for the FSA, is that access to loans was so difficult. For our area, agents are so far away. I live in a fairly urban area, but the closest FSA agent is like an hour and a half away. So, you know, you're at a time period of one agent represents 4 counties at one time during COVID, you know, kind of overload system. That's where I think for those times you were able to turn to Greenstone and to other local credit services to help us really push through these hard times. It's kind of hard, like, you know, as entrepreneurs, you need cash, you need cash quick. Things happen fast. It's not a long term, or it's not a harvest is in October. A harvest is in 30 days. We need money now. So a lot of systems feel like they don't move that quickly. So I'm not, you know, I don't know a lot about policy and a lot about things like that, but anything that can move quicker, which sounds hilarious, you know, the real problem with programs, it might be as fast as possible, but anything that can come as quick as possible is always helpful.
Yeah, but I love you said the other thing, you don't have employees, it's just you, but employee management 101 is let's reward the behavior we want to see more of, and if we're going to help profitable businesses based on previous profits as opposed to just covering losses, that'd be a different way of thinking about things.
Yes.
What would help you over in Maryland? Oh, unmute. There you go.
Oh, sorry about that.
You're doing great.
So for me, it's a lot about our capital investment that we had to do. We had to just keep plowing money into the farm because we didn't know how busy this was going to get. So one of the big things that we did was start buying reefer trailers that were our refrigerators, because we had walk-in boxes already set up at our store because we were already doing this. We were already selling produce. But then you buy a 36-foot long, 8-foot wide reefer trailer to start storing produce in because you're going through that much. And then you realize, oh my, we went through all that in a day. So now we're starting to say, okay, we need another one. So we found a 53-footer that we bought and had placed at the farm, and then realized, oh my, that's a not enough space. So we now have 3 reefer trailers at the farm that we fill up constantly with produce and meats and everything just to try to keep up. And this is on top of the cooler space that we already have. And these reefer trailers are not cheap to run. They're running off of diesel fuel. But it was the quick fix. Like Alex said, it needs to happen fast. And, you know, we didn't go anywhere for funding for that. It was just that we pulled it out of the money that is supposed to get us through winter or supposed to get us started in the spring. And we just said, okay, we're just going to go with it. And you have to, you know, as a farmer, you have to have faith that this is all going to work out and that you're going to make it work. And that's what we did. We just kept going and going. But you start seeing the amount of money that any of us, especially in this farm-to-consumer business, have put out in capital investments this year. It's unreal. Anybody that is in this business that was able to handle the customer load that we've had to handle, I know that I'm looking back at our numbers thinking, oh my, where did all that money go? But that's where it went. It went into the farm. And now, granted, I feel very comfortable if anything was to ever happen again that we would know how to handle it. And my gosh, I'd never want to have to deal with 22-hour days and 1,000 customers in a couple hour days again, but you know, I feel like we've gone through this, we've made the capital investments, we know how to deal with it now. So I just, you know, I think the help really for us is capital investment help, you know, being able to be prepared again for something like this, because I think that money usually goes to the bigger guys that are more likely to be prepared for some of this, some of those bigger grocery store retailers. And at the end of the day, I think the small local farms were the ones feeding America, and maybe they weren't getting it from the grocery stores as much.
Very true. And Kelly, you were talking about improvements you were making in your store, not just plexiglass to keep everybody safe and distanced, but also having to buy new registers and expand that. What else did you have to do that was a big investment, and how could USDA and Congress help you better? And I see that her technology is circling, so maybe we can...
So, one of the biggest ones...
Yo. Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So, the biggest thing we had to do, we, just like you guys were saying, you know, we had all this demand we didn't know how to put all this food, and also how do we haul it. My sisters and I go to the Western Woodland Market 5 o'clock in the morning to get loads of watermelons or anything that we don't personally grow, we source there. Well, we had to find a way to get it from the Western Woodland Market in one trip, because we had to open by 9 o'clock every morning, so we have to get this done. So we had to buy a brand new transit van that we had hoped to put off for a few seasons and been trying to get it, but we just didn't have the urgency yet. And all of a sudden, we had to do it. As I talked about before and what the guys had said as well, you know, we were starting with low money to start with for the kid, and all of a sudden, now we have to have these things. And so we didn't quite have the cash flow yet, but we had to just take the risk. And like they said, we had to get these this equipment really quickly to make sure that we could meet this demand. Otherwise, people were going to source their produce elsewhere. They were going to go somewhere else, and we didn't want to lose that customer base. So buying that van with the investment also, you know, as I said before, usually it's just my sisters and maybe two women or two men that help us at the stand. We're seasonal, so we don't have a huge amount of employees with a small staff. Well, now we have 70 to 80 orders that we had to pack and keep people to help us with it. So we had to hire people really early on that we usually would wait until we were peak season when we were picking our harvesting our own crops. When we had more to do, that we would hire more people. Well, now we need them now. Just to help us with the stores, able to come on the registers. We had to buy the sales for the registers. We had, and those are expensive. I mean, maybe not to bigger people, but for small like farms like me, that's an expensive thing right there. And then buy the square sites and buy the iPad and everything at the registers. So there's a lot of, like they said, a lot of stuff we needed quickly in the beginning of the season. We didn't have a lot of cash flow at the time. So like they said, capital investments and help there. This line is something that my husband wrote, and I thought it was just so good. It says, "It has not been easy to run a small business during this time with uncertainty surrounding COVID-19. I would love to see Congress focus more directly on providing for small business, because while big business may be the bones of our economy, our small businesses are the heart and pulse of American people and communities." And I just think that speaks volumes right there. We're the ones that need it right now, and we have stepped up to the plate to provide safe and good products for our customers, and I really would love to see some way to help us out when we need this capital really quickly. The PPP loan was great for us. We were able to use that for our staff. The only downfall is what it was looking at was our previous season's payroll. And just like I said, we went from having a small staff to much larger. So we actually went through that payroll amount within like 2-3 weeks versus the 7 weeks it was supposed to help us. So, and I know there wasn't a whole lot to do, but maybe if they do another PPP program or something like that, maybe they can look into our current season, because our current season reflects us much better than our previous seasons.
And I'm thinking about this from a financial perspective and long-term impacts on a business. Even if you've had a really great year, you started it out typically at a low point in your savings account because you've just paid for the winter. You're trying to get started. You don't have a lot of money, which is not the best time to ask a banker for a loan.
Yeah.
Farm Credit has faith, so I've heard you all mentioned, yes, we were able to get that done. Mm-hmm. So now you've made these huge investments, which is borrowing on future profits. So you've spent this money. Trevor, you said, where'd all our money go? Ah, into 53-foot reapers, right? So we're going to end this season a really good one. But that cash to get through the winter doesn't sound like it's going to be there quite in the same way, because you've had to make these huge investments in your businesses. So what does that mean for you? As far as long-term impacts, what are you thinking about right now, knowing that this season isn't even over yet? Go ahead, Kelly.
I'm not sure if that was directed at me. The internet is, like, crazy over here. So I don't know if I got your full question. I just want to say, based on what I did get out of it, we decided to open up year-round, and this will be the first season we're ever doing that, just so we can keep up with these investments and make that van payment and make these payments that we have to. So that's a big thing that's happening this year, is we're opening up year-round, and I think the online store will carry us through. I think it's going to be successful. People love it right now, and I think they'll love it even more in the winter, so you don't have to get a good car. So that's something that's huge for our business, and, you know, we're just really hoping people continue this way of thinking. Like Alexander and Trevor said, they're wanting to know what parts are coming from. They want to support and know exactly where that tomato was grown and how it was grown and what was on it. And I think it's going to be great for us. I think it's going to really help us be able to stay alive in the winter, which helps my family, helps my sister's families, and helps our customers.
Yeah. And And that's going to come with added cost too, because now you're potentially heating a store and you're keeping the lights on more than you were before. So these are challenges that are definitely upcoming, but you're figuring it out already. Alex, how about you? We talked a lot about making that investment in land that you'd normally do over a period of time, not just all at once. And now that investment, it's not like you can turn it back into cash quickly.
Yeah. So kind of weird, the long-term impact, it's hard to tell, but COVID kind of forced them to grow and build infrastructure like driveways, farm store, greenhouses so quickly that I no longer have any large projects to build for next season. It's not funny to say that, but next year's predicted profit after expenses is probably the largest it's probably has been so far with my business, because we just spent so much money this year and built such a buffer up. It's kind of nice, though. It also brought so many new customers who are looking for fresh foods. And even beyond that, I've seen checking demand, not even my own business, but neighboring businesses, local products. It was there before COVID, but now it's been exaggerated to a higher amount now. I really, really think that it's going to push our business to a next level, because it forced us to then think in a different way. It's forced us now to think, how can we make sure we have an extra $5,000 laying around in March? You know, just in case. It's putting new ideas in our head and maybe putting the infrastructure investments, you know, farther up in our priority. Like, I think Kelly talked about buying the van out of nowhere and trying to stretch a few more seasons. I was doing the same thing with the truck. I was trying to stretch it a few more seasons, which forced me to scale up very quickly, which in the long term, I think, will add benefit the business.
And I'm so glad to hear you remind us that, yes, we made an investment to help us do business, but that comes with a lot of added expense, because it's not just a truck payment now, right? There's insurance that I need to worry about. Trevor mentioned putting all this diesel fuel in these reefer trailers, right? I've got to repair these things, keep them maintained. So it's not just, poof, the money is out there. I've also made a financial commitment to go along with this investment just to keep going in the growth cycle. So,
Yeah, it's funny. I always wanted a farm stand on site. It's like I always wanted to have do something like that. But I was like, you know what? It's a lot of capital. It's a lot of time to do this. So maybe a few years and I can spend time doing this, we'll do it. And then it was like, well, no, we just have to do it. You know, there's no other option. At that time, luckily the markets opened back up in June, or the June or July. But at this time we had no idea. We thought it could be a year without farmers markets. So we kind of had to rotate as quick as possible. But again, now we have a brand new farm store that can now bring additional income into the business in years where we're not having to, just survive.
And Aaron, in every sense of the word.
Yeah.
Aaron, this has been a phenomenal conversation. I want to jump in here and just make sure we get to some of the audience questions, because we've got a bunch coming in. So if that's all right with you, I'll shift a little bit into some audience questions. And Aaron, please feel free to jump in as well. So the first one I'm going to ask, and I'm going to kind of consolidate three or four questions that have come in. But first of all, like, the audience is like amazed at the resiliency and the flexibility that all of you have demonstrated with your businesses. But folks are curious, you just talked about the level of capital investments you've each made and the new customers. But as you look to next year and you start to do additional planning, you know, how are you going to keep those customers? How are you going to maintain sort of the level that you've grown your business to and make sure that the income is? Anyone who wants to start, feel free. I don't know, Trevor, if you want to go first, or Kelly, go for it.
Just because I was trying to we one-stop shop for our online service. We want them to choose us versus other chain. You know, all the basics that you would need except for bread. Like a bakery into our business. We're renovating the office area that was actually more like a playroom for our kids, but our kids aren't there that much anymore. So we're going to transform that into a bakery and have a big porch going off of that. So we can add bread so that our customers can use us even more and see us as more of a source for all their one-stop needs, their basic needs. So that's going to be something that also you're talking about capital. It'd be great to get a small business loan with low interest so we can put this and start working on this winter. We already have milkshakes. We're going to move that in there as well. But just some things to help our customers, you know, keep choosing as we want to capitalize on this opportunity right now. Like Alex said, he was able to put that farm stand there that hopefully that would carry him through. That's things that we're doing as well, is we want to make sure we are capitalizing on this and making it even better than we were before COVID.
Yeah, so one thing that this year, and you said earlier, is that that money that was going to the farm store, the other infrastructure, was claimed to an employee. That was a big jump for 2020, was the idea that we're going to hire somebody and grow our business that way. So this year we chose to not have a full-time employee or part-time employee with myself and then do the farm store instead. So my plan to maintain this production into 2021 is to now use that freed up capital to employ more people. That's kind of my plan at this point. Because right now, all the foundational work, all of our ordering systems, our infrastructure, our clientele is all there. We've built that. That's easy. That's here. We're good. That's no problem. Now we need the money to pay the workers to grow production.
So one of the big things for us is a little different than everybody else is saying is the fact that we have actually invested here in the last 3 months, 2 months, into a playground. So, you know, and by playground, I don't mean a little playhouse in the back. Our playground's actually going to cover about 3.5 acres for kids to come and have fun. And, you know, it seems like a far-fetched idea, but for us, it's the fact that if that kid is sitting at home and mom says you want to go to the grocery store and the kid says, hey, I want to go to local Homestead because I want to go play on the playground, then they're coming here. And that's our big hope, to continue to have great products, because we work as kind of like a co-op. So we do beef, pork, lots of different meats, lamb, goat, chicken, all that, and produce. And then we also work with another local farm that does milk in glass bottles. We do breads. So kind of like Kelly is taking their market into that direction. We are a one-stop shop. You can pretty much buy everything you need except for flour and sugar at our store. So as we head that way or continue going that way, our hope is just to make sure that people remember that we're there. And one of those ways is to make sure that the kid that's in the backseat of the car keeps saying they want to go to local Homestead and then instead of anywhere else.
I love it. We're having a conversation with some friends in D.C. and saying, all right, we just moved back here and we have to quarantine now in an apartment. What are we going to do with our 4-year-old daughter? This is exactly the kind of thing that they are looking for, to make sure she gets outside and gets some fresh air and isn't just spending all her time inside. So good on you guys.
Such creativity. It's incredible. So next question from the audience. Are you worried that, you know, if people start to feel more comfortable eating in restaurants, that they won't buy so much to cook at home? Do you feel like the restaurant business sort of replaces what you all do, or do you see it more of like an integrated kind of hand in hand?
I can hit on that one first, if that's okay.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so when restaurants started opening back up in Maryland, we were concerned that, well, we started actually pulling back some of our production a little bit to kind of prepare.
Any sound yet, Trevor?
Can you hear me?
There we go.
Sorry about that. So one of our big things for us was idling that back and pulling back the strings a little bit and saying, okay, the restaurants are going to take some of that business. But what we noticed is during quarantine, people realized that they can have a pretty good meal at home. you know, when they're buying produce from us and meats from us, you know, they're able to kind of say, huh, I was going out to eat for this steak, and the steak that we buy at local homestead's a whole lot better than the steak that I'm getting at the restaurant. And so, you know, a big thing for us is, and we've said this from when we started, we wanted people to know where their food was coming from, understand how their food is grown or raised, and then to eat together, to bring back that tradition of sitting down at a table and eating. And I think you're starting to see a little bit of that. You know, as we started getting some of our butchering appointments back to start sending out more and more steers and pigs, we were starting to make little bigger roasts with some of those steers, because we went from families that were not eating at home, and if they were eating at home, they were eating quick meals, so they didn't want that 3 or 4 pound roast to put in a crock pot or to make it for dinner. Well, now they do. They're looking for those recipes, looking for those products, and I think that's changed. I think a lot of money has shifted from the restaurant industry back to the farm market industry.
Alex, Kelly, anything you want to add to that? Alex, I know some of your business previously had gone to restaurants.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't hear the first question. My computer acted up. What was the question?
So whether restaurants were going to eat into the new business that you've developed when they start to reopen.
Oh, so yeah, I think the demand in our local community is so high, in that a lot of farms, you know, tend to go to the restaurants because they're easier place to market to, you know, they're direct right there. But I found that demand, especially with home delivery, is so high that you could open 5 restaurants down the street from us and it wouldn't that business want it. And for a lot of us, when our restaurants open back up, what I found that a lot of them end up closing. We had a few restaurants in the area that we sold to that end up closing because they're just not set up to kind of perform in a COVID world. They weren't set up for it. They couldn't ship quick enough to make it work. So for us, we only had a few local restaurants, and those local restaurants end up closing, which was kind of a shame. But no, at no point has restaurants ever ate into those sales for us. We're not targeting that market.
And we're really worried here. The weather's about to change. How can a restaurant, like a farm, make a profitable business go of it when your scale is constrained, right? You need a certain amount of scale just to make it work. And if that's limited inside, like Trevor was describing in his store, 7 people down from the 15. Oh, by the way, that's got to count employees too. Oh my goodness. Now all of a sudden, cold weather's going to hit. We have maybe a month of outside seating left. But I think, Alex, as you said, no matter what, people are going to look for good food, and they're going to know your names, and they're going to be looking for your products, whatever that market is. So you've done an amazing job setting the stage for that and getting your names out there. So good on you.
Kelly, anything you wanted to add?
Really just reiterate what Trevor said. You know, I think the world has changed today. You know, people... I love going out to a restaurant, but I notice how much closer to my family and we could put people over in that quarantine. I think that's the new way for Americans to get from, and you can do that better when you buy your own products and make it at home. So when the restaurants opened back up, my sister and I, we were scared. We were like, man, our bubble's going to burst. You know, we had this peak, we had this spike, but it really has never went down since. Here in Hendersonville, and it really hasn't made a difference. We actually sell wholesale to a lot of restaurants too, so that's, you know, that's good for us. So really, yeah, it hasn't affected us on our business scale.
All right, thank you for those fantastic answers. I feel like we're because we've had a couple of technology glitches here. I'm assuming that most of you are using social media and the internet to do a lot of marketing. So if you want to, you know, talk a little bit about that, but plug sort of the importance of broadband in rural America, feel free. I know, Trevor, you're doing this from your car. Kelly, obviously, you know, you're having some connection issues. Alex, you've had some connection issues, so feel free to let folks know.
Yeah, it's super important. I'm currently at my parents' house because at my farm, I get less than 1 bar phone signal. Yeah, for access, it's important. Our entire business runs on internet. Our CSA, our ordering systems are all online based. So is our counting. so is our marketing. It's everything is underneath that the bubble of usable internet. So yeah, anything you can do to expand that is always fantastic.
A big thing for us is, you know, we had a storm roll through our farms here the last week or so, and our internet still isn't working right. So I'm out in my truck where I get best service and doing this all on my phone. And that's why my video looks awful. It's not my best angle here, but we work with it. And, you know, that's daily life for us. Internet connection issues, that's normal for us here. And our county just went back to school yesterday, and all the things I see on Facebook about, you know, not having good enough internet to do this distance learning has been an issue. And I think that's going to be, it's going to be spotlighted here because of that. So yeah, it's a problem, but I'll tell you, internet is great for us as well, because I wouldn't have the customers we have if it wouldn't be for Facebook. For us to be able to put it out on Facebook and Instagram, and we do weekly videos on Facebook that help customers see what's in the store. That way they know exactly what's in the store. We found that actually helped speed up the process so that they could see where everything was instead of having to look around and try to search for things. So it's definitely helped out with COVID. Our marketing is very big now with Facebook, but anything to make internet a little better out here would be great.
How about you, Kelly? You were talking about school shut down just as you were opening, and you have 9 little kids between you and your sisters, so you're trying to run a business on what I assume is the same internet they now need a lot of bandwidth to do their schoolwork on. Like, how's that worked out?
It's been kind of a mess. But in the spring, I was able to do a lot of the schoolwork with my daughter. She's in first grade. She's my only one in school at the time. I did hers in the evening, and we had internet. So that was okay. But now that they are in one location, which is my mom's house doing this, the internet kind of was spotty all the time. But, you know, I was going to just back on recreation. We do live videos just about every day. My sister or me, my oldest sister, Lika, or me do a live video to tell everybody what we have at the store. And that's been a huge hit for our business. We started that about last year, but everyone loves to see exactly what we have coming in every day. And so Facebook, we wouldn't be the business we are without Facebook and social media.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. We're about out of time here. There's actually a lot that I think is so fantastic about all of your businesses that we didn't get to. So I'm going to, we have a landing page at farmcredit.com from the Farm Gate, where you can find links and more information about Alex, Trevor, and Kelly. Kelly's family is very involved in the USDA Food Box program. Alex has done some incredible partnering with other farms in his area and with community projects in his area during COVID. And Trevor, in addition to partnering with lots of farms in sort of a co-op style for his market, also has an incredible online education program for kids where you can do worksheets and see videos from his farm. So they're all doing incredibly creative things to serve their communities as well. So I encourage all of you to reach out and learn more about each of their operations in that sense too. On behalf of Farm Credit, thank you again for tuning in. Thank you to our panelists and to Aaron. We know you all are desperately trying to keep up with your businesses here and do everything you can to support your families during this time. So I cannot express our gratefulness enough for you taking time away from your operations to join us to have this really important conversation. And you're all such resilient, incredible, impressive operators. So we're just grateful to have you as customers at Farm Credit as well. For the media that may be on the call, Mark Hayes is your contact. If you would like to follow up with any of our panelists or with Aaron, feel free to contact Mark. We'll throw up his email address here in a second. Anyone else who may have a question or would like to follow up, congressional staff, et cetera, with Kelly or Trevor or Alex or Aaron, please let me know. We're happy to put you all in touch. In addition, this is recorded. It will also be on the from the Farm Gate webpage. So if you'd like to go back and watch it, or you know somebody who would like to watch it, please feel free to go back, pull the link down. It'll probably be posted tomorrow, the recording. So again, thank you all so much. We really, really appreciate it. And you know, we'll be back in touch with, as we continue to see how COVID is impacting agriculture, we'll continue to bring more topics and bring you more customers to tell their stories. So thank you all. Have a wonderful rest of your day.